Oregon legalized recreational marijuana in 2015 and tasked the Oregon Liquor Control Commission with regulating its production and sale. Recently, concerns have been raised about the amount of cannabis that ends up in illegal sales channels, moving to states where pot is still illegal. In response, the OLCC started Operation Good Harvest as a way to make sure cannabis growers are selling into legal channels. Steve Marks, OLCC's executive director, was in our studio yesterday where we recorded the following interview. And because this interview is pre-recorded, we are not able to take calls or emails today. Steve, you're making a swing through Southern Oregon to get briefed on Operation Good Harvest. What is that?
So I'm glad to say for the first time we're doing proactive inspections of the Southern Oregon production out here. So our inspectors are going out to grows to make sure that the harvest is taking place in compliance with our regulations, primarily to ensure that diversion isn't occurring. Obviously, we don't have enough inspectors to do every single grow, so we're doing some of them. We recently changed our rules and put in place a, I call it the easy button. They can schedule a harvest up to 9 a.m. of the day of harvest, and then that'll notify our regional office under Jim Hunter here in Medford that those operations are taking place, and then we can go out and take a peek.
So are these spot inspections, or do you schedule them with the growers?
These are random inspections. They're not scheduled with the growers, we've set that up, obviously, randomize it a bit, can't do everyone, but it's saturation of inspections. For this fall harvest, outdoor grow only doesn't include our new responsibilities for inspections of OHA growers. OHA outdoor grows are not a part of Operation Good Harvest. This focuses strictly on
so those would be medical marijuana grows, correct?
No, strictly on the recreational grows. Yeah, the OHA is the
OHA
medical
is
ones,
medical.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
They were not a part of Good Harvest this year. We just got responsibilities for those inspections in July of the medical growers. So we're out focused on the recreational outdoor growers, and it's good to have the capacity to do the job that Oregonians gave us to do.
So when you talk about diversion, you're really talking about parts of the harvest that are going into the black market, maybe going out of state, being sold elsewhere in the country?
Yep, that's absolutely it. And as you know, this region of Oregon has traditionally been a source of diversion. And with the new licensed, regulated system, it's very clear that marijuana is being produced for consumption in Oregon within a tracked, licensed, and legal system overall. So it's our responsibility to keep that product contained in the legal system. And obviously, you know, a lot of the headlines talk about a federal crackdown. Well, I don't see it that way particularly, but what we want to do is be respectful of the federal laws out there so that they don't focus on any aspects of just looking at our licensees because they are our licensees. Instead, the federal government, and we've worked closely with U.S. Department of Justice and law enforcement agencies throughout Southern Oregon to go after criminal activity no matter where that comes from. If it's our licensee, we'll refer those. We have no criminal authority at OLCC. We do administrative violations. That means, you know, we can fine you. We can take your license away.
So if you see something that, if your inspector sees something that is criminal, I guess you would then turn it over to law enforcement, correct?
Absolutely. So we refer criminal or suspicion of criminal activity if our inspectors do see that to law enforcement. But we also, the public certainly thinks we have broad jurisdictional powers over everything marijuana. So we have set up a call center. We make referrals and tips through calls that come to us to law enforcement when we don't have jurisdiction. Here in Southern Oregon, we'll be co-locating with officers from state police that will have marijuana enforcement responsibilities. Their investigations will be separate from ours. But sometimes if they can share the information from their work when they can, then we can take action based on the evidence against a licensee if necessary.
So Operation Good Harvest, you mentioned diversion being a key issue, but are you looking at other compliance issues as well when you do these spot inspections?
Absolutely. So we're looking to make sure the plants are properly tagged. We're looking to make sure that no harvest may have occurred before, or if it is, that it's accounted for in the cannabis tracking system, that they're properly weighing the product, the wet marijuana, as it comes in. We're looking at, we may look at their camera system, their drying rooms, to make sure the security requirements are there, that they're secure, that they're licensed facilities that they've told us they had on the property, the scale, and in the place that they're supposed to be. Or, you know, some of them have added, like, certainly people found out and wanted after last year's wet harvest season, a lot of them have added drying capacity, more rooms to process and dry and cure the marijuana in from the field. So there's changes that are supposed to be approved by us. So it'd be a violation if they didn't notify us and we didn't approve the fact that they were making the change. But those are pretty simple ones, right? Those aren't things that necessarily are going to cost them their license.
We're talking with Steve Marks. He's the executive director of the Oregon Liquor Control Commission. And because of Mr. Marks' schedule, this conversation is pre-recorded, so we're not able to take phone calls or emails during this particular segment. So Operation Good Harvest is really focused on outdoor growers. What about indoor growers? You're not looking at them right now because they harvest at a different time?
Yeah, so, you know, indoor growers harvest and produce throughout the year. So there's a lot of another 9 months outside of the outdoor harvest season in Oregon, usually, you know, about a three-month period around Croptober, as it's known, where we're focused on the outdoor grows today. But we got 9 months of our time to be able to work on the physical locations that indoor growers are at. So that's a much easier inspection. We know where they are. All of their products supposed to be contained in a facility. It's not in a field. So there was some interest in the marijuana community about that being disparate. But I think, you know, when you think about it, we got a lot of other time to inspect those outdoor or indoor growers.
In June, OLCC announced that it was suspending processing grow permits until sometime next year. So I assume from that the pace of applications hasn't slowed much in the last few years?
So our processing pace has slowed, but the folks that want to get in this business is still a robust flow of new applicants filing licenses with us. Of course, those are on hold while we have this other workload that we're on. That'll continue. It'll be some time before we'll be able to get to those licensed new license applications coming in. We do have some that are still in process that were submitted before the deadline, and even those are waiting a very long time. One of the things that no one, that we certainly didn't anticipate, and we probably didn't create the most efficient regulatory structure to make work, is on relicensure. Well, there's a tremendous number of changes taking place, both in business structure and physical locations, all of which require some oversight and inspection and to make sure that we understand what those changes are, that those new people added to the business have had their background checks done. So the renewal process of existing licensees is taking, you know, this is an estimate, but 80% of the time that a new license would take.
So you mentioned that the new application rate is still pretty robust. I mean, the conventional wisdom has been that, oh, yeah, California legalized marijuana, and now that's going to attract a lot of outside investment away from Oregon marijuana grows. But it sounds like you haven't seen that.
Absolutely not. And with these business changes that we were talking about that are taking place, a lot of those are very robust investments. We had one that came in for, I think, $55 million. I can't remember the number of individual entities or people who were investors, but it was in excess of 30. Some of those investments were family trust funds. So the number of background checks on these newer, larger, well-capitalized investments are becoming quite lengthy.
So you must have a lot of principals in these investments, and you have to do a background check on every single person?
So if it's corporate, we do the corporate officers, but we're getting a lot of nested business structure. So if when you go downstream a couple layers and you got a family trust with over a 10% investment, or our dollar threshold hardly makes sense in the with the amount of investment that's being made anymore. We say $50,000 and 10%, and we had some flexibility about whether we checked lower than that or not. But a lot of these are substantial investments, and so you got part of a family trust invested in a marijuana business with a lot of people without corporate officers, maybe equal voting shares. So we got to figure out how to handle things like that, obviously, and we want to make our workload proportional to the risk and evaluation. We need to make sure that we got compliant operations.
So is there an upper limit to the number of permits that will ever be allowed in the state of Oregon? I know Josephine County is really going through a lot of efforts to try and regulate and limit the number of pot grows in that county. Is the OLCC ever going to say, hey, enough is enough, we have the number of growers that we're comfortable with?
Not specifically the OLCC's role to actually make that recommendation, but to provide the information to the legislature, policymakers, the industry, to help make that judgment about whether there needs to be more control. Certainly, we're going to work on that. Oregon's system was opened. You could have multiple grow site licenses within our canopy limits, the square footage that you're allowed to grow marijuana in. You can have different license types and be owners of all those things, be fully vertically integrated from grow to wholesale to processing to retail. That's not the case in other states necessarily. Washington's more controlled system where they separate the manufacturers from the wholesalers from the retailers, and they had limited number of slots for licenses, more lottery to get into that. Oregon's system was conceived as wide open. And so very capitalistic, rough and tumble. I remember giving a speech to a marijuana conference 3 years ago and saying, be prepared. You're going to have a lot of competitors in here. You need to be well capitalized. The shakeout in the market was inevitable under Oregon's conception.
And we're also seeing, at least recently, a pretty significant drop in the price of marijuana.
And part of the reason why these business changes are very important to some folks, because it gives them a legal way to recoup a part of that investment they made. As easy as we work to make it for licensees to come into the OLCC system, we need to make it easy for people to get out in a legal way.
Steve Marks is the executive director of the Oregon Liquor Control Commission, our guest this morning on the Jefferson Exchange. This is a pre-recorded interview because of Mr. Marks' schedule. We had to record this interview on Thursday. It's airing on Friday, so we're not able to take phone calls or emails on this particular subject. I don't want to forget the L in OLCC. We've been talking about marijuana a lot, but the wine industry continues to expand in Oregon, craft distilleries and breweries, of course. How is that expansion in that part of the industry affecting the OLCC?
It's interesting. I spent a lot of time in Staker. I worked with Governor Kitzhaber through his legislative years and his first governorship and others. We spent a lot of time working on creating rural jobs. Well, suddenly I'm working in an agency where we are creating a lot of rural jobs. In every community, there's a craft distiller. There's brew pubs. There's marijuana operators. And certainly then a host of licensees. A lot of our events, we do all the temporary liquor licensing for, public events that take place where there's service of liquor. Well, those are blossoming in Oregon. So we get a lot of work out of all of that economic activity out throughout Oregon. So it's been a pleasure to work in a part of the business that's supporting Oregon's rural economy and regions. And our workload's increasing, obviously, because of that tremendous growth.
But I would imagine with all of those businesses, you're not having to create new regulations as you are with the marijuana industry, because the wine industry has been here for a long, long time.
More evolved, but, Oregon's system was conceived out of prohibition. We've machinated our way back to a lot of things that are allowing more availability of liquor and more consumption environments. Our minor postings are changing. There's real movements for some of these craft brew pubs that have a real family experience to make changes. So we're helping the industry create the environments to service not only tourists, but to service Oregonians themselves.
What about expanding retail locations? How does exactly does the OLCC determine where, for example, liquor stores are located and who gets to run them?
So we've been going through a tremendous experience of expansion right now, the greatest expansion since Prohibition. Used to be that Oregon had about one liquor store per 12,000 residents statewide. Our numbers changed to about one per 18,000 residents. We saw the need to make some change. In the old days, the Liquor Commission would try to maybe pick a location itself where a liquor store should be, did it sparingly. And since we've changed our system, it used to be state-owned stores. Now those stores are agents of the state. They're private businesses. We haven't really provided for growth in those businesses. We've recently, over the past year and a half, been expanding. So what we do now is we'll open up a geographic region of Oregon. We divided it into five regions, and we had an open competition for making additional proposals on where someone wanted a store. Very market-driven process. It's very interesting to watch. They have to meet our criteria of our staff evaluation, have enough money, have some acumen to be able to run the business. But when they get recommended to the commission basically, they make presentations directly to the commissioners, and the commissioners make the decision on the selection. We had five commissioners. That has now expanded to our seven-member commission. We've never operated with seven members yet. We're lacking one member today, but hopefully they'll be appointed soon.
And finally, the bottle bill. I understand that older bottles with 5 cent redemption values are limited. I mean, we have maybe a week to get those in. What other changes are happening?
So what's really happening, and I think we had some communication issues, and what's ending is the sale of the 5 cents. You can still bring in those 5 cent containers and redeem them. They'll redeem them for 10 cents through, but it's really the sale that's ending. And so there was some confusion about that. But we'll continue to redeem them. We have, surprisingly, I didn't realize when I came to the commission that we actually regulated the bottle bill. Very small program. We have one person that works on that, and her workload has gone up tremendously with these changes of new products coming into the stream that can be redeemed with the responsibility we have for approving redemption centers. The Oregon Beverage Retailers Recyclers Association is the one that proposes them, provides that oversight, but we approve them and we approve the member contracts to their redemption center. So a number of retailers of size get together and then they can point their collections to the collection center rather than on-site.
We've been talking with Steve Marks, Executive Director of the Oregon Liquor Control Commission, a conversation recorded on Thursday. Mr. Marks, thanks so much for being with us here on the Jefferson Exchange. We appreciate you coming by.
Appreciate being here. Always a pleasure to be in Southern Oregon.